No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I am your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I am joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. For the past several weeks, we have had guests on the show to talk about issues like equal rights for women, border security, and statehood for the District of Columbia. So today, we're going to talk to some young people. We will be joined by students from the University of Arizona to find out what's on their minds and what issues are important to them. Before we talk to our student guests, however, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez. Hi, Kathleen. As always, thanks for helping to get the conversation started.
Glad to be here, Senator. Hello, I'm Kathleen Gomez, calling from the great border of the state of Arizona, and I'm really excited because today we have two students from the University of Arizona. The first one is Zoe Katsambasis, I believe I'm saying it right, and she's majoring in political science. I believe she's a junior this fall. And we have Diego Vlasic, who will be a sophomore in the fall, and he is studying physiology. So I'm really excited to have them both because I think it's really good that we hear from the youth, because I think they're a lot different than what we were like at, what would that have been? The 70s,
100 years
80s.
Ago.
Yeah. Right, Senator? So yeah. It'd be interesting to see, you know, we had such different issues when we were their age. And so even though I still feel like I'm their age, I think the issues are probably totally different from their eyes.
Yeah, I think you're right. Let's get the ball rolling with and we'll start by asking both of you guys to give us your feelings about this. But you know that student loans are due to double the interest rate on student loans from 3.4% to 6.8% on July 1st, unless Congress does something. How do you guys feel about that?
I don't know. Zoe, do you want to go first?
All right, I'll go for it. Honestly, that's really scary to me, because I'm at the U of A because of a generous tuition waiver that the state actually no longer offers. And my parents are public school teachers, so if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be there. And, yeah. I mean, I plan on going to law school, so student loans are something that I'm definitely going to be affected by. And, you know, you combine a huge interest rate like that with the prospect of finding a job afterwards, and it's pretty frightening.
Yeah, I bet it is. How about you, Diego?
Yeah, I'm actually definitely kind of on the same lines as Zoe. I know a lot of people who have taken out student loans, and, you know, throughout the state schools, I mean, the prices are very exorbitant. You know, I think it's around $10,000 almost a semester, and out of state is even more, it's like $20,000 to $30,000. And so a lot of kids have to take loans, and when you take, you know, 3% or, you know, you raise that much, that's a large number for $200,000 worth of loans. And I just think that, you know, it's one of those things that's important. It's just it's one of the top things you need to worry about, because education of, you know, younger people, they become the next, you know, senators and the next presidents and lawyers and doctors. And we need them. We need to make it easier to have our youth be able to achieve their goals. And with such high interest rates, I think it's a bit of a turnoff. And, you know, someone will say, well, I don't want to be $300,000 in debt at the age of 25. Maybe I'll just not go to college and become an electrician, which is nothing wrong, but, you know, we do need some higher level jobs out there and careers.
Yes, I agree. And just want to add that the senator from Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren, pointed out this week that the federal government loans money to banks at 0.75. That's the interest rates for banks, 0.75. And she has suggested that student loans be held at the same rate, that we loan money to students at the same rate we loan money to banks for the same reason, that it's an investment in the future.
And
I agree with that.
I also think she also had some kind of a campaign on the internet where you could, I think if you look her up, and all these students out there, if you're listening, you really should just Google her, and I think you could find, you can, it's like a petition, online petition to the senators and congresspeople to vote for her bill. Because it is really, I just can't imagine in a time we're still not on an economic, I would think we're still in an economic crisis, and to put this kind of a cost on students, I mean, especially if you're going into the medical field, you're looking at 7 years, and you know, to saddle this kind of a debt on our youth is just, to me, I don't understand what they're thinking.
Well, and you know, that's a great point, Kathleen. As of yesterday, 250,000 people had already signed the petition that you're talking about. So
right.
People should go online and sign that.
And it's not only the students that sometimes get the loan. You know, it's parents that take out loans to help their children, because they can't imagine, you know, having them do this on their own and have like a $200,000 debt. So it not only affects the students, but, you know, the parents who struggle so hard to, you know, who want to get something better for their kids and are seeing this kind of a debt. It makes me nuts, because I just don't understand how anybody on each side of the table, or whoever it is, wherever you stand politically, could agree that this would be a good thing.
Yeah. So, Zoe and Diego, what's important to you? What's a political issue that you really care about that you think doesn't get enough attention?
You want to go ahead, Diego?
All right. I think the biggest thing for me personally is, you know, I'm in the physiology department, it's basically going pre-med. And so, you know, if I go through and I become a doctor, there will be jobs, but I know a lot of people who are in various fields, and there's, you know, at our school and all the other schools, there's so many various programs and different career paths. I think the biggest thing for me is there going to be jobs that are needed for all these jobs? Because, you know, you look, I think our school has more than 20,000 at least students, and that's, you know, there's three state schools, not to mention all the community colleges and private schools. And I just think, is there going to be enough jobs that are needed for a higher education? Because you can't, you know, you can't expect people to even take out loans and be in debt for 200 plus thousand if there's not going to be a job for them once they graduate and they can pay it off. And if they have to go work as a waitress or waiter after 5 years of school, it's kind of unfair to expect them to do anything. So that's kind of my biggest worry.
Yeah, I can see that. How about you, Zoe?
Well, I agree completely. I mean, it's pretty hard to expect somebody to take out all those loans and work that hard and then come out and have nothing to do. But I think for me, I mean, I've been born and raised in Tucson, Arizona. So I guess that being on a border state and so close to the border, it's an important issue to me to have addressed border security. Like, a lot of people don't necessarily understand how pertinent it is to our location and how much it really does affect us. And I think that nationally it's kind of overlooked sometimes. And I don't know, that's something that I would really like to see addressed, is just the security down there, because the violence that comes from all the activity around there is just insane, and it's really hurting our region.
Well, Zoe, in addition to that, I mean, I think you're Kathleen and I did a show on border security. I think you're right. It's very important, and people in Arizona certainly have a different attitude about it, especially how important it is, as opposed to those of us that are live thousands of miles away from the border. But let me also ask you, how do you feel, should border security be part of a broader immigration policy? How do you feel about the notion that some people say illegal undocumented aliens are coming into the United States and taking jobs away from young people? Do you think that's true?
I don't necessarily think that that's completely true because, I mean, quite honestly, most of the undocumented workers that come up are usually taking unskilled jobs. They're doing unskilled labor. And I think that the jobs that we're talking about for our youth are for the college grads. So I wouldn't necessarily say that that part seems completely true. But I do think that border security has to be a part of an immigration reform thing as a whole because they both go hand in hand.
And I think you're right, Zoe, because when talking to people that, like, say, are in D.C. and back, they think of border security as just putting up a wall. But they don't understand there's not really a wall. I mean, there might be a wall in Douglas from a mile out of our city limits to the east and the west. But all through New Mexico is just those cross, what do they call them, those rails that are like on an X. Yeah, exactly. And with the drug and with the cartels, it's definitely – when I was growing up, there used to be a saying there was honor among thieves. They wouldn't go after your family. Everyone had such a different attitude. But now it's become very vicious, and there's killings and there's shootings, and it revolves around a lot with the drug needs or the drug market in the United States. But the violence is very, very obvious. And you know, then we have people who say, don't go to the border, you know, don't maybe even go to Tucson because there's so much, you know, the borders is so insecure. And in a way, it is insecure in some ways, but yet it is secure also. So it's really difficult when we're dealing with the loss of tourism, the loss of, you know, visitors that came down to our area, which, you know, we had so many in the winter that used to come because it was a great place to be. So it's a very complex thing, and I think people just don't quite get what border security means to the border communities. So it is, it's very interesting that you said that, and I agree with you, Zoe.
Well, the other thing that I also noticed is, the other thing I've noticed also is we have a lot of, in a way, where we say, you know, we need to strengthen our borders and we need to make sure that it's, you know, that we don't have all these undocumented workers working in America, being through, you know, who knows who they are. And that's very true. The problem is, though, is that a lot of what we do ourselves encourages it. In one way, we say, you know, no, stay in your country. We don't need you. We don't want you. But then we go and we say, oh, but, you know, we need this roof house or this house roof. So, you know, let's get some illegal undocumented workers to work for cheaper. So I think there has to be more regulations on businesses that have, because in Tucson, I know of actually, there's a car wash, I'm not going to say where, that got in trouble for hiring. I think almost all their workers were illegal, undocumented. And so I think there needs to be stricter implications and, you know, punishments for hiring undocumented workers. And we need to also kind of make it so that there's less desire to come here. We got to make it so that there's bigger penalties for coming here. So it's not just, you know, you show up and we slap you on the wrist and they don't do it again.
But, you know, I'd like to follow up with you, Diego, too. One thing that happened in Cochise County is that when I was growing up here, there was numerous farms. There was probably about 20 or 30 farms. And at that point in time, they had a guest worker pass or permit. Somehow, I think maybe 15 years ago, they did away with that. And now there's only 3 farms left. So in a sense, it's really – because I don't think – I'm not sure, maybe Diego and Zoe, you guys wouldn't mind picking cantaloupes or picking chilies, but it's not exactly what maybe we want for our children. And so there's nobody to do that. And so those farms have actually closed up because they couldn't get people to do the, you know, the agricultural needs, to provide the agricultural needs that they were looking for. So, you know, there's kind of that other side to it that, you know, I don't know, there was a movie, A Day Without the Mexicans or something like that, because do the dishwashing, they do the laundering. And so maybe it's a sense of making sure that we have a good guest workers permit program going so that, especially in agriculture, that they don't see the problems that they have, because I don't think the youth today is really looking for those jobs.
Well, and that's one of the stumbling blocks with the new legislation that's been proposed by the Senate. That's one of the big problems with it that many people see, is that the guest worker program is not as integral a part of the legislation as it should be, and that it will have a serious impact on agriculture. And we should also point out that while there's this internal pressure for agriculture, there's also an external pressure. The Chinese this week bought the largest producer of pork in America, the Smithfield Company. They paid over $3 billion to own the Smithfield Company. So that's my next question to you guys. How do you feel about people like the Chinese? Are you fearful of the growth of their economies and the impact it has on America? Do you think it's going to have 20 years from now? Do you think it's going to have a major impact, what's going on with rising economies like China today? Do you worry about that?
I know I do. Well, it's actually kind of funny because at the U of A, we have a pretty diverse population, if, like speaking ethnically, and we actually have a lot of Chinese students who come and they will get their degrees from like the Eller College of Business, or they'll go get their degrees from our top engineering programs, and then they all, like, I mean, I've spoken to some of them that I've had classes with, and they've said, oh, yeah, I'm just going to go back to China and get a job, because an American degree is worth more than their Chinese degree. So it's kind of scary to me sitting there in class going, okay, so you're coming here to get the same education as me so you can go back home and try to, like, ruin our, or not necessarily ruin, but compete with our economy and try to out-compete us and push us into a further recession. So that's kind of a weird dynamic of being a student there.
Yes, and well, and when I was a college student 100 years ago, the United States dominated world economies everywhere. When I was a student, and this was probably true with Kathleen too, who's a little younger than I am, we in our generation, our time in college, if you got a college education, you got a good job. There were very few people that got out of college that didn't get good jobs. And I'm not sure that that's true anymore. You know, I know that my assistant, a woman that interns in my office, has a great college education, and she's a waitress while she's waiting to get into graduate school. So I think it's a little different now. We don't dominate the way we used to, and I'm not surprised that that's a concern. Kathleen, you?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I was just listening to one of the talk shows this morning on TV, and they were talking about how the Chinese are actually, I can't remember what, if it's their leader right now that was talking about changing the way in which they kind of govern. It's going to be a little bit broader. They're going to change some of the rules. But what they said in summing up was that it's going to create a large middle class in China. So we are looking, I'm just shocked that they bought, so they bought Smithfield. That's like, that's almost all America. I can't imagine that people sold it to the Chinese. I mean, I guess I would if I was offered $3 billion, but it is, I think, a very terrifying thing. And to tell you the truth, nowadays, I've been looking for another job, and the fact that I don't have a master's is a big issue, because that's a plus in all the job markets. So these kids can't just get a bachelor's of science. They have to go on to, like your intern Rachel's doing, get a master's. So yeah. Diego, what do you think? I mean, you're looking at, you want to be a doctor, right?
Right.
And so you're looking, you're just finished your first year, you're looking at another 6 years. Do you see the Chinese being involved in the health industry also? Do you think that that's something we have to look at?
Well, I have, the one biggest thing is that because there is such a, you know, obviously that China has the one-child rule, and that they're predominantly male, and that they don't have an incredible healthcare system themselves, The biggest thing I think is that there's going to be a lot of American students of physiology, because in my department there's very few Chinese or non-American people in my department that I know of, at least. And I think that the big thing is going to be it's going to offer me, you know, let's say for me, and I'm 20 years later, I might have a job here in, let's say, Tucson, and they're paying me, you know, $100,000, $200,000. If China has a real need and if they continue with their economic growth, they may offer me $500,000 a year to work for them. And I think a majority of people will obviously take the $500,000, you know, the $300,000 plus salary and work in China. So I am, like Ms. Brown said, I am also worried a little bit about how they're buying the food, because China does surpass us in almost every way now, economically especially, but also in just the amount of people they have. And the one thing that we have over them is our amount of agriculture, the amount of food farmland, which America is lucky to have because we have so much. And with them buying up, you know, I think you said the largest pork supplier, and if they start buying up land, and I think that it's definitely a little scary. And I think as Americans, we need to, you know, I know it's, there's a lot of this, you know, free trade going around, but we need to make sure that, you know, make it more desirable to trade within America, and make, you know, give incentives, and maybe have tax more international business compared to just business throughout America. That's kind of my personal.
I think that's true, because let me tell you, you know, like if in Mexico, you can't go and you have to have a Mexican partner to, I think you can only own 49% of land or a business. And if you go to Europe, it's very difficult. You can't just walk into their country and start, you know, get a bank account and open a business. You know, they make it very protective of their own people. And I understand we're about free trade. I understand we're about freedom, but at what point do we say, do we protect our own and say, hold on, you know, maybe this isn't in the interest of Americans. I'm kind of at the point where I am not so worried about the rest of the world in that sense. I want to see America prosper. I want us to see us strong. And I think this kind of stuff is undermining us. And down the road, we're going to look and say, man, we may not even own the land that we have our homes on.
Well, first, I just want to point out, Diego, that if the opportunity arises to take the $500,000, you should go for it, because the best way to get into heaven is to take care of your mother in her old age.
That's very true. And in case people don't
and
know
your godfather. Let me add that.
And
your godfather. Yes.
And in case people don't know who's listening, Diego is my son, and he is the godfather of Senator Brown. So
godson.
We kind of pull
he's
him in.
Godson.
Oh, God, what did I say? Yeah, godson. Okay.
If he's making $500,000, he could be the godfather, too. I don't care.
He probably would be.
Let me ask you guys. I have a this is my kind of bonus question for you. If you could pick a political candidate, now I know Zoe's a political science major. If you could pick a political candidate, somebody that you wanted to see run for president in 2016, who would that person be? Any ideas? Either Republican or Democrat. Doesn't matter.
Zoe, you can go first.
To be perfectly honest, there is no, like, ideal candidate that I could say that I would, like, get really excited about. But I guess if I really got stuck having to pick one, I'd probably pick Rand Paul, just because I like it. I like his style, and I like the way that he kind of shakes things up a little bit.
He shakes things up, all right. He does. He does shake things up.
Yeah, and I don't know, I kind of like that he's not an establishment. I don't know, he doesn't fall in line with the establishment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How about you, Diego?
I guess I'm a little bit different from Zoe in the fact that I like to, you know, I think that the best way to change something is to go from within the establishment. Someone like Ron Paul, you know, he's a bit made fun of, you know, he's a bit of a lot of people really don't like him. And the person for a Republican would like to see run would probably be the New Jersey governor, Chris Christie. I think that a lot of Democrats like him. A lot of people in New Jersey, you know, like him. He did a lot of good things there. And he's not too far on any one side, which I think is the biggest problem now, is we have people like, you know, people who are running. Like Obama is very on the left. And then we had Romney, who was also very far on the right. And it's kind of the, you know, two opposites. And I think if we could get someone like Chris Christie. As for a Democrat, I think that, you know, economically, Bill Clinton did well. And I think, you know, should Hillary Clinton run, I don't think she will. But if she did, I think that, you know, she might have some success. But I personally would prefer Chris Christie to win.
Well, those are, I think those are interesting choices. I think that Christie is very seriously thinking about it. And I think that he understands what you're saying, Diego. And that's one of the reasons that he stands with the president. I think when he thinks that the president is right, he stands with the president because he wants to show America that he can be bipartisan, that he can be, you know, that he can focus on the issue rather than the party. So I think he's set himself up.
Kind of take it out of the party in a way and just say, you know, I support what I feel is right and what is best, regardless of whether, you know, a Republican, a Democrat, a white, a minority, a rich, poor. You know, he kind of just says whatever I think is best is what I will support. And I like that person.
Right. And I and Zoe's pick as well, I think is interesting. I think it's a great pick for a young person because young people like to shake things up and things are moving at an iceberg's pace in Washington D.C. We even had Robert Dole, who's pretty much you know, middle of the road conservative in the Republican Party, come out last week and say that it's terrible that they're not getting anything moving. So I think you guys are both making wise choices in that regard. Well, we're going to take a little break right now. I hope that Diego and Zoe will stay with us. And we ask people to call in after the break. So now you've heard what we have to say, and now we want to hear what you have to say.
And let me give you all in, that's listening in the audience out there the number to call. It's 888-429-5471. And why don't you think of a question and ask these young, really quite intelligent young kids here. Give them a question and let's have a good debate. And I want to thank Zoe and Diego, and they'll stay on with us for the second part. If we don't get any questions, I have a couple of questions I like to ask them about social issues, which should be interesting. So here we go.
Okay, we're going to take a short break now and play a song from the late, great Nina Simone. So here is "I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free." Back in a minute. We're back. I should mention that Zoe Saldana, who is one of the stars of the Star Trek movies, if you haven't seen the latest Star Trek movie, guys, get out there and see it. It's great. But she's going to star in a new movie about Nina Simone due out later this year, and I'm sure that it'll be very interesting. So welcome back to the show. Please call in if you're out there. Kathleen, you have some questions?
Yeah, let me give the number again. It's 888-429-5471. Again, 888-429-5471. Or you can also call 530-413-9537. All right, yes, I wanted to, Zoe and Diego, are you still with us?
Yep.
I'm clear.
Okay. Right. You know, we were looking in this past month or so, right? We've had the terrible things that happened in Boston. The terrible things that happened in Boston, the Oklahoma, you know, tornadoes that devastated almost the whole state, and also the blast that happened in West Texas. Now, government has kind of stepped in, but what do you guys think about government helping communities in those types of situations, and how much can we help them, and what is your viewpoint about it?
I guess, you know, the biggest thing about it is, I mean, as a nation, we're obligated to help our own when we come into hard times. And I know a lot of there's a lot of third party groups that do it, like Red Cross, and I know they just tax their funding. But you know, there's like the whole thing in Oklahoma with the tornadoes and Katrina throughout the year. We can't just leave them stranded out there. And actually, you know, I'm originally from New York, and I have a lot of friends who got hit by Hurricane Sandy last year. And you know, I think now Jersey Shore, I think, is almost completely refixed now. And there comes a point where we can't do everything for everyone, because we are in a very large country and there's natural disasters everywhere all the time. And it's, you know, you got to kind of hope that people will be willing to donate. And we can't expect the government to just absolutely, you know, pay for everything that's been damaged. And as a individual, we also need to be responsible. We need to have insurance if you're in a, you know, high danger area. You know, you need to get house insurance and car insurance. And, you know, there has to be a middle ground between just leaving the people stranded out there and just paying for everything so that they're back 100%. There has to be a limit to what we do.
What about you,
Zoe? I agree with Diego. I mean, we have these huge disasters. There's just no way that the local governments, the state governments in a lot of cases, can handle it themselves. And, you know, I think it is entirely appropriate for the federal government to step in and offer that help. Unfortunately, we have had issues where the, you know, federal government's role in that hasn't been the best, like with Hurricane Katrina, but I mean, I'm sure that there's been improvements, and I hope that the government continues to improve that, because that's certainly something that I think a lot of the American people rely on when they get hit with things like that.
Well, I think there's a lot of hope for the future here, especially when you have a law student agreeing with a medical student. You know, doctors and lawyers are supposed to be natural enemies. So the fact that you guys see some of the issues the same way, I think, is very hopeful.
So I'd like to ask you a question. You know, I majored in political science with a degree in international service. My whole thinking was that I would go into the foreign service. But what I've been hearing now, and I believe so strongly in the way that our political system is set, because I think it's one of the best that there is out there. But I hear so much now of people thinking that going into politics is just, you know, like you're kind of a terrible person. It's full of corruption. Nobody wants to get involved in the politics today, because they feel that it's just so bad and everybody in it is so bad. Do you hear that same kind of sentiment, and what do you think about it?
Oh yeah, I hear that all the time. I mean, I myself am very politically active. I have been since I was like 15, and so I mean, I've been around the political circuit in terms of like watching stuff, and politics gets really nasty, unfortunately, today. And I mean, being in Tucson, one of the nastiest congressional races that I think this country's ever seen was the Giffords Kelly race back in 2010. And I mean, everybody remembers that just being awful. And that really, I think, kind of cast a plague on politics in Southern Arizona. And nobody wants to get involved, and myself included. I think that when I see what happens when these people that we elect go off to the Capitol, whether it's the state or federal government, it's sad and it's sickening in a lot of ways. And it makes me feel as though I could serve my country or serve my community in a better way in a different capacity other than politics.
Wow, that's hard to hear.
Yes, it is. It's a sad commentary, although I certainly understand it, and I think Kathleen does too, because we've both been involved in national politics for a long time, and you know, that is the reputation that politicians have. Woody Allen said that politicians are one step lower than child molesters, and unfortunately a lot of people believe that. And you know, in recent years, I have to agree with you, Zoe, some of the things that we've seen that we've never seen before, really terrible, aggressive political campaigns, not only by the candidates, but from outside groups that these 527 independent expenditure groups that spend so much money, not really to build up their candidate and talk about the good things in their candidate, but actually to tear down the other candidate. I think when Kathleen and I worked for Jimmy Carter, we both worked on Jimmy Carter's reelection, and I think Carter spent in the neighborhood of $100 million on his campaign, and last year Obama and Romney both spent $1 billion. We've gone, so in the 30 years that Kathleen and I have been in politics, the expenditures have increased more than 10 times. And unfortunately, most of it's been spent on negative stuff instead of positive stuff. So that is hard to hear, but thanks for being honest.
Unfortunately, it's the reality.
It is very sad because we need bright people who have a sense of right and wrong, who, and we need them desperately to get involved in politics, whether it's even running for a mayor of a town or city council, because we are only a reflection. Like I was thinking about this when people talk about how bad DC is. Really, look at your little small town politics. That is just a reflection of who we are. And if we continue to send people who have their own agenda and have, you know, not the agenda being for the whole, we're going to be in serious problems because they are making the decisions, like look at the student loan, you know, in every which way they are impacting us on our day-to-day life. And it's very scary to me because if we don't send good, bright, honest people to DC, we're just going to have more of the same. And that's where I don't know how we get out of that hole that we're digging ourselves, because you're right, it has become vicious, the name calling, the slinging, you know, going into depths. Remember when McGovern was going to run Senator Brown and they talked about his wife and her mental illness, and it was a shock. People just said, no way, that's not what politics is. And now you look at it, and my gosh, what they, the kind of extremes they go to find the worst thing possible. And we're all, you know, we're not perfect people. We're all got some kind of skeleton in our closet. So it's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah, it is. And I think of John Kerry, too. You know, whether you wanted him for president or not, I had mixed feelings about him. But the man had three Purple Hearts and a Silver Star. And 527 groups tarred him as a coward. And that 40 years ago, that would have never been tolerated. It would have never been tolerated for people to get away with calling a veteran who had been wounded three times in the service of his country and had been decorated for his service a coward. So things have changed. And I just hope that bright, energetic people like Zoe reconsider further down the line and maybe stay involved, because you're right. That's the only way to change it. The only way to change it is to get good people in there who care about the people that put them there rather than their own personal agenda. And unfortunately, we don't have enough of that today.
And you Diego, I don't know if you know, with what's going on in the health industry, with the changes with healthcare, what do you see happening in your field that you want to go into?
Well, I mean, kind of just to an overall view, a lot of it's very similar. Doctors are definitely more liked than politicians. Probably because they say, you know, when you feel bad, you go to a doctor and they make you feel better. So
right.
You know, there is a lot of that, too. The general biggest problem right now is that a lot of doctors go in it for various reasons, and it's not so much necessarily anymore where you get the doctors that are there because they want to help people. A lot of times it's for, you know, doctor being doctor is a high-paying business, and a lot of it is for, you know, for profit, for money. And if you look at a lot of hospitals, like, say, in the Tucson area, we have two or three hospitals that are actually a for-profit hospital, and it's run like a business. And I actually have a personal experience in one of them. where a family member, you know, they didn't want to do a procedure on them because they had Canadian insurance and they didn't know if it would pay. So, you know, the biggest problem in a way is that it's becoming, everything is kind of revolving around money, and that's just, you know, there's not a whole lot that, you know, people that you can do to change that. But I do think that it takes, you know, people who are willing to do something for the good of people, like in politics, you know, I personally know Zoe, and she's very dedicated to it. And, you know, I think it's people like her and hopefully people like me in the medical field where we can go around and change kind of how it's run, because we can sit here and, you know, say this is how it is and this is not right and we need to change it. But we need to, the important thing is we need to actually go out and do it and make those changes happen.
That's true. Well, it's very good. I'm feeling very hopeful.
Yes, me too. Every time I interact with bright young people like this, it restores my faith in the future. So, Zoe, if politics isn't the answer for you, what kind of law would you like to practice? Have you decided on that?
I think I really want to go into criminal prosecution, and that's just because, I mean, honestly, ever since I was a little kid, I've always had a passion for following the rules and justice and stuff like that. My first grade teachers nicknamed me the Enforcer because I would tell kids to follow the rules. And
wow.
So that's always, I don't know, it's something that I think would be a good place for me. And I don't know, I like the idea of being able to serve my community in the sense of helping make it a safer place.
Well, that is a very noble cause, I think. It's a very noble attitude, and I think you can serve your community greatly in that capacity. But I would also point out to you that many people that go into criminal prosecution end up in politics. The district attorney, the district attorney's job is a stepping stone very often to mayor, governor, senator. So you'll have to be on guard for that. But yeah, it's really an important role. And here in Washington, for example, we do not prosecute our own crimes. The federal government controls the District of Columbia, and it prosecutes all the crimes in D.C. Except for certain misdemeanors, and it causes us many problems. Our community sometimes is not as safe because we leave it up to the federal government to prosecute people rather than people like you that have a strong sense of community and want to work to help the community. The federal government has a different agenda. So being a prosecutor is a very important job, and I hope that you do it. Kathleen, you've got any more questions?
I was going to ask Diego, have you decided, I mean, I think you talked about all the different ways in if you didn't become a doctor, maybe you could work for different lobbyists that have to do with, you know, the health industry. Do you have somewhat of a direction that you think you want to go?
Well, I think, you know, my first and primary goal is to finish med school because that gives me a kind of a thing to lean back on, because I can always, if nothing else works out, I can always go into and, you know, be a doctor. The funny thing is that I want... I'm going into getting a medical degree, but I don't know if I necessarily want to become a doctor. I think I would like to lobby for, like you said, various health groups. And, you know, as you know, when I was a child, I used to lobby for smaller class sizes in New York City.
Right.
So I've always had a passion for it. And, you know, I would like to get into politics later on in life, too. So I may be getting a medical degree for non-medical, necessarily related career, but I do like, you know, I don't get me wrong, I love, you know, the human anatomy, and I love, you know, I find it very interesting on what's wrong and how to fix it. So I'm not 100% sure, but I definitely at this point in time will be doing medical school.
Well, you know, I think that's great because I think if you do have a political sense, and heaven knows you should, because I dragged you from a very young age from one rally to the next. So I would hope that some of that activist role, even maybe if I don't always agree with you. At least it's an activist role and you're getting involved. But I think the health industry with all this healthcare changes is going to need people to really look at it and be able to figure out what's wrong and change and mold it to make it a better system, because it's really, we're not broke yet. It hasn't broken, but it is a serious issue when you can't get health insurance and you're looking at hospitals in Tucson like Carondelet who have $10 million worth of charity, because nowadays you cannot refuse anyone when they come to your ER, and we want to believe that we as Americans take care of the poor and the people who need to be taken care of, but it all comes at a cost. So, you know, we need
right,
people.
That,
pardon?
Sorry. I was going to say, Brennan, you know, as you probably know, I'm not the hugest fan of the Obamacare and what, you know, Obama and what the direction that they're going with it. But I will admit that I do believe that the health industry, especially the health insurance companies, they did this to themselves, because they for years have gouged everyone, and you know, I think that they need to realize that there will, when you know, have basically kind of a laissez-faire kind of way about doing things, that it's going to come around and, you know, hurt you in the long run. So I do think that the medical field has mismanaged and gone the wrong way in a lot of ways with what they've done. And while I don't necessarily agree with everything that the current administration is doing, I do think that it was inevitable that something was going to get passed along these lines.
Well, you know, one of the things that is great about politics, and Diego, I know you know this, and I think Zoe knows it too, because she says she's been involved in local politics. You really don't need to do it as a profession. You can get involved on the side. You can be an activist like you were in New York City, Diego. You can volunteer for a campaign, or you can give money, or you can help by serving on different boards and commissions locally to serve your community. So the two aren't necessarily mutually exclusive, having a job and being in politics. And I think it's great that you guys are so aware of what's going on around you. You know, when I was in college in the 60s and 70s, we thought we were like the most aware people that had ever been born on the planet, because we were involved in a war that many of us thought was unfair, and other social issues and things like feminism and equal rights for everybody. What do you guys see as the issue that kids or young people in college rally around today? What are the, if you had to pick a big issue on campus, can you tell us what you think it is?
Marriage equality.
Marriage
Definitely.
Equality.
Wow.
And that, how do you feel about that, marriage equality?
From the people I know, I would definitely say that everybody can rally around marriage equality. Everybody seems to be on the same page with that, at least on our campus.
Yep. Well, it's moving quickly. It's, you know, we've seen it in Washington, D.C. You know, we have a law here in Washington, and it seems like a few years ago when we were in the forefront of pushing for that law, we were pretty much alone. But now we see so many states falling in line. But it's behind marriage equality laws. And it's interesting because, you know, I'm sure you both know that Arizona has a pretty conservative reputation. So if they're considering this on the, you know, campus of the University of Arizona, I think that's probably a good sign for the issue anyway.
Yeah, that's actually I actually agree with Zoe in that marriage equality is a pretty divisive and important issue throughout the country and on U of A, because we do have a lot of Christian groups. I personally think that at least for Arizona – the biggest group I saw was probably like you guys talking about immigration reform, because we do have a large, as Arizona, we have a large Hispanic community, especially in places like Tucson and South. On the border, it's almost, you know, now 99% Hispanic. But, you know, Arizona has kind of is well known for the SB 1070, and whether or not you're for that or against it, you know, it's got in the news. And I think the biggest issue is a lot of people including Hispanics who came over legally, are, you know, kind of split because they feel, I guess, an attachment to people who that from their parent country or their native country. But then on the other hand, you know, there's a lot of unfairness about it. I know you guys, I'm sure, are aware that there was a while ago, some illegal immigrant students were getting less with tuition than legal residents of the state of Arizona. I know it was in California too, I believe, I'm not 100% sure. So I thought personally, the biggest thing, social issue at least wise, is immigration.
Well, we certainly have been struggling with, and I think you guys know about this, the DREAM Act here in Washington, which would allow undocumented children to go to college. Well, you know what, guys? It's about time to wrap up. I wish we had another hour to talk to you. I think you're both brilliant, and I appreciate you being on the show. I hope you will come back again sometime. Zoe, thanks so much for being part of this discussion. I wish you all the best with political science, and you sound like a tough cookie. So when you're a prosecutor and I come to Arizona, I'll make sure to walk a straight line.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Kathleen?
Thank you to Diego for coming on and for bringing – and introducing us to your friend Zoe, because I'd really like to meet her. I think she just sounds like a really well-rounded young lady. And I hope you both will join us when we talk about some big issues like gun control and immigration, and we'll make sure to invite you back and tell your friends to listen and to call in, because we really do want to talk to the youth of America. We like to talk to America, but I think it's really important to talk to the youth, and you guys are great, and I feel real confident that between both of you and your friends, I think maybe America has a chance.
Yeah, I have to agree with you 100%. We need to it's nice to see two young people that are so well-informed and so engaged, and we really need that to make America a better place and to keep it the greatest country in the world. I think very few of us would argue with the fact that we're all lucky to be Americans. We really need to work at it to make it work. You know, I say often that the best news and the worst news about our democracy are the same, and that is that it represents the people. And we need good people in there so that the best interests of all of us is represented. And we continue to be a beacon of hope for the rest of the world, and to be the strongest and most democratic country on the face of the planet. So thanks again for joining us. I hope everybody will come back next week when we'll have another interesting subject. We're moving towards having discussions on bigger things like gun control and, again, on immigration policy, on statehood for the District of Columbia, and for other important issues. So please – I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kathleen.
And let's not forget the Equal Right Amendment for women, because women are not protected under the Constitution. It has not passed all the states. And if we can't give anyone else rights, if we can't give the women of this country rights.
That's right. So we'll see you next week. And thanks again. Thank you, Zoe. Thank you, Diego. I'm proud to be your godfather.
Thanks a lot, Maya, and thanks a lot.
No problem.
All right.
Bye.
See you guys. Thanks.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.